I wish to dedicate this talk to my friends Georgina Paul in Oxford, England, and Thilo Jürger in Sackville, New Brunswick, Canada, and all our long phone calls bridging long distances full with misunderstandings and clearings and everything. Some possibilities for sailing in a friendship und weitere Möglichkeiten. No. It is no error, no mistake, no failure, kein Fehler. You needn't fall at all for alliteration. There's no failing in that friendship, or failing is not the subject. The subject is sailing with an S. Es ist ja nicht das Subjekt, das segelt. Es sind Freunde, und auch wenn die das Subjekt, das eine im Satz sein könnten, sind es zwei oder drei, vielleicht ja auch neun. Aber neun ist nicht nein, but nine can be neun, can be nueve, can be neuf, can be deviat or kilans. This is nine, but nine is no. Just one letter is changing places, and there is no nine. There are not nine. There are just two false friends, nine and nine. Die falschen Freunde, les faux amis, so called in many languages. But why should the first friends one find in learning a foreign language always be false? And what would be the right way of falsification for friends? That one cannot count on them, or that one doesn't want to be counted on your Facebook account? And on the other hand, are digits, numbers, numerals, and countable things the only true friends one could find? And would you define a relation in which one part is supposed to stay always the same and never change its meaning and or his or her mind? Would you define this as a friendship? Is it just wordplay, plain pun and fun, to board a ship in a relation, in a language where a ship is a common suffix and countless vessels of that kind could be launched? What is shipped by it? What could be the cargo? A content? A message? Two friends? Or nine? Is this transportable, translatable at all? Or should it at last be just poetry, what gets lost in translation, like Robert Frost said? What could be the verse, a value of things one can neither translate nor count? Or shouldn't shipping be another way of translating movement on moving ground? Or do you think broad roads are the only ways to go abroad? If not, welcome aboard. Welcome on sea, on water, on the big between, zwischen Land und Land, betwixt and between, zwischen language und Sprache. Auch im Deutschen ist ja vom Übersetzen die Rede, und der Grund ist in Bewegung hörbar. Auch wenn es sichtbar gar keinen Unterschied gibt zwischen Übersetzen und Übersetzen. Doch ist beim Übersetzen das Wasser schmaler, man setzt mit einer Fähre über, mit einem Boot. Man setzt über, wo man das feste Land nicht aus den Augen verliert, ein anderes Ufer schon im Blick hat, where you can already see the other shore. Man übersetzt einen Text und man setzt über mit einem Schiff, über einen Fluss, einen Strom, einen See, sogar über den See, a pond, a lake, aber nie über die See, das See, das Meer. Das geht nicht, mit einem Satz hinüberzusetzen, mit einem Sprung. Es braucht eine Weiterung, schon im Wort, etwa wie Yoko Tawada, die Sie kennen, Übersetzungen ausdehnt und weitet, mit einer winzigsten Änderung, nur small change. One single letter zu Übersetzungen, overseas tongues or in Portuguese, linguas ultramarines. La lingua, la langue, the language, oder die Sprache, die immer mehr als eine ist, the tongue, die Zunge, die Zungentongs, die sie sprechen, die eine, die vielen, the German sea, and caution, notorious false friends in that case, sea, oops, sea and sea. The German pronoun sea can be either singular, feminine, she, or plural, can be they. But you could be sea in German too, all of you in a formal, polite form of address. And you could also be ear or in the singular, du. But ear in that case would be an informal, familiar, plural form and no possessive of her. Language is an item, a being one can communicate with, one can interact with, right? So let's speak with language. Manchmal antwortet sie. Manchmal antworten sie. Sie, die Sprache. Sie, die Sprachen, the languages, or sie, die Sprachen, they, those who spoke. Is disambiguation needed? Or and. All natural languages, one could say, keep the presence of those who spoke. Traces, flavors, slight change in stress, slight imprints, which intensify or weaken the particular use of a word, show it in another light, change the direction in which it points, the possibilities of linking between words, phrases, and sentences, the chemistry of grammar. So-called natural languages can also be seen as living, moving beings, at least I prefer to do so. I tend to see them as a sort of ecosystem by their own rights that we can observe and describe. We can try to find out rules, we do use and could manipulate them, but we shouldn't forget that we are living on their terms. We are thinking in and think with them, are parts of a system in which every action is interaction, Wechselwirkung in German and physics, and not just in a one-directional way, a line of cause and effect. A system which is self-organizing, non-linear, complex, highly self-referential and redundant. In other words, languages are not just dead objects. Words aren't mere things, man-made tools to form other things with. As sometimes imagined by the ideologies of the bygone heroic industrial age. The only really man-made languages are formal ones, such as programming languages. Formal languages are built to explore, to understand, recreate, construct, and manipulate structures. They try to reduce complexity and avoid the ambiguity that characterizes natural languages. The ideas, they ought to be universally understandable and fully translatable. The idea is Eindeutigkeit. Sorry. You cannot imagine how much I like this word. It's so funnily German. And gives wonderful examples of how and what can be found in translation. In its core, it bears the root Deutsch, which leads directly to the language, Deutsch, German. The supposed Indo-European root Teuter refers to people, land, so that Deuten could mean and was used as explain, declare something to the people. And in that way, it includes also the idea of translation, clearly shown by translations like to construe or to interpret. On the other hand, it shows a bodily gesture, to point at something, to move the index finger, the pointer, to indicate something. A gesture pointing out one single point, a gesture that creates Bedeutung, significance, meaning, sense, importance. And by the way, another possible translation for deuten is to portend. In English, that could point at what is important is what comes from outside, what is imported. Whereas German gives importance also to the person who is pointing, the one who is bedeutend. Someone who gives significance must own some, the one. In English, you have at least the possibility to think of that as neutral. But die Ein in Eindeutigkeit seems to be quite neutral too. Just one jot or not one jot, ein Deut, worum man sich nicht scheren, nicht kümmern muss, war eine kleine Kupfermünze in Holland und am Niederrhein small change on both sides of a border. As small as the dot on the eye of dem jot, one single point to point at. But a big change will happen if you try to translate the whole word. Some dictionaries suggest clarity, which would be an equivalent rather to Klarheit. Uniqueness is more Einzigartigkeit and refers to another concept of a single, incomparable specimen. Eindeutigkeit means that one element of a set matches or is equivalent to, would be exactly the same as one element of another set. This comes close to the concept of identity. Two languages, two words, one meaning, thus simple to translate. Numbers are eindeutig, as seen above in the example of 9. Numbers that we usually call real, which can be called irrational and transcendental like pi, but can be infinitely precisely defined up to billions and trillions of digits. But the most frequently used translation for Eindeutigkeit is the strangest word to me, ambiguity. Seen in relationship to Eindeutigkeit, it looks a bit paradoxical, like a sort of counterpart, an affirmation by denial of the contrary. What could it mean? An interpretation may be that in English the concept of ambiguity is thought of as normal and Eindeutigkeit as an exception of rather low probability, while in German things are thought of as being or at least wish to be eindeutig, unambiguous, and ambiguity is seen more as a threat, a cause of disorder, insecurity, instability, uncertainty, and other such negative things bad by prefixation. German is or can be an extremely precise language, nevertheless precision is also not the right word for Eindeutigkeit. One can be very precise in ambiguity. German is famously used by philosophers like Kant and Hegel, and in the first part of the 20th century it served as a lingua franca of science generally. Great discoveries were made and described in those days by Austrians, Germans, and in Switzerland. Just think of Hilbert's program, think of Schrödinger, Einstein, or Gödel. Discoveries connected with relativity, incompleteness, complementarity, and it was even a German, Heisenberg, who found the uncertainty principle for quantum physics. And actually, one could say, German might have been the language in which the possibilities of Eindeutigkeit were thought and brought to their limits, their borders. In classical logic and mathematics and all formal language that are based on them, the basic difference is between one and zero, both so-called neutral or identity elements, which leave other elements unchanged when combined with them, zero for addition, one for the multiplication of real numbers. One and zero something or nothing true or false, or at least more or less true or false. On a line, a scale between 0 and 1, less or more, bigger or smaller, the basic figure is the line. A one-dimensional object on which one can place and sort items like numbers in a relation, with no ship at all in that case, and every kind of comparison, of competition, of ranking, plus or minus, better or worse. The basic number, the divine number of truths of identity, is 1, and 0 means nothing or false. Everybody can count with 1, 1 and 1 and 1 and 1, and so on and on and on and on the line up to infinity. It's so easy, so einfach, so simple, quite simple as it is natural, es sind Zahlen, die natürlich genannt werden, und die Einheit ist 1, the unit, eine eindeutige, gegebene Größe, der Urmeter, von dem alle anderen Größen abgeleitet sind als Teile oder Vielfache, the one, the only one. In German, everyone is gendered. Must be either male or female or neutral, ist ein er, ist eine oder eins, ist ein er, ein es oder sie. And, which is also the case in English and most of the other languages, every first person is a third one or a third one. Every me becomes seen from outside, a she or a he, but in Hungarian, for instance, there's just one third person, no difference marked, just and every V is for others as they. Others are other ones, right? One means same as me, right? I am one. Am I? You are one. Two are two. Three are three. But am I the right? Oops. But am I the right one? Or the left? Just left of the right one, or left by the right one? Am I alone? On the one hand, or on the other hand, ich bin eine, bin sie. Who or what could I be? Oh, moment, yeah. Who or what could I be when me is not a he? I is another. J'ai une autre. Ou ein autre, er ist einer, der eine, einfach ein er, eindeutig, er ein eindeutiger und selbst als anderer, er ist signifikant, zweifelsohne. Maybe there is just a little doubt about how to write significant with a small or capital S as an adjective or a noun. Is this ambiguity needed? Sie kann vieles sein. Eine sein, ich sein und sie sein, you or they, she and me. Sie kann eins sein und das sogar mit ihm und uneins, sie kann sein und können sein, wo er ist oder nicht ist. Ihre Differenz, this her, your, their difference, or even the difference between her and him, too. Ihre Differenz ist eine andere als seine. His is another one. An other one. Is he the one that counts? Or the one who counts? Is this ambiguity needed? Is it possible? And should she as sie be the one that doesn't count, even if she is one who counts? A vast number of historical examples for that could be enumerated spontaneously. But my question would be, what is sie in the relationship in relation to one? Is sie zero or no one? Nothing. Of course, she is no thing, no body, or something, or somebody else, jemand anders, somebody sounds good. And else in German is a female first name, anders a male one. But someone seems to me even more precise. Someone, irgendwer, Vielleicht ja auch jemand, der im Deutschen leider gleich zu einem wird, zu einem er. Here we have the figure of the so-called generic masculine that generalizes the male as prototype of humankind in German grammar. Some is another case. One could also translate it into einige. Einige means some, but einig also means to be agreed or united. Einige, some who are united. They are one. Some, one. More than just one, one. And without excluding that one. But could one explain that in mathematics when she finds herself not able to translate it into German? Well, maybe exactly that would be helpful. But for that, we'll have to do something impossible. To extract a root from a negative number or search for a solution of the equation x squared plus 1 equals 0, which seems hopeless on the infinite line of the real of real numbers. There's no answer. Maybe elsewhere. Could there be an elsewhere beyond the so-called real, beyond the infinity of the line? The idea of another sort of numbers arose in the 16th century and was developed in the 18th and early 19th by the Swiss mathematician Leonhard Euler and the German Carl Friedrich Gauss. Euler introduced the imaginary unit, I, a little I, not a big one, as the number that when squared yields minus one, the author one. He also found a formula for minus one that became famous as the most beautiful theorem in mathematics called Euler's identity. E raised to the power of I by pi plus 1 equals 0. E is the base of the natural logarithm. Pi, you know from geometry, both are important mathematical constants and so-called transcendental numbers. This little I, furthermore, is ambiguous. Like every normal square root of a positive number, it too has two solutions, two figures, a positive and a negative one. Like one for the real numbers, perhaps it could count as a multiplicative identity of the imaginary numbers, but that I don't know. It could give a strange kind of double identity. I think there's not so much known in general about imaginary numbers. They are still suspected of being purely fictitious figures, just invented as a sort of expedient to deal more comfortably with real and complex numbers, useful but meaningless. Named as a contrary to the real, they enable the erection of a second line rectangular to the real, creating thus a two-dimensional coordinate system, the complex plane, an area, ein Areal, where complex numbers compose the spares with an imaginary part and a real one, are coordinates placed on that plane. Seen this way, the so-called real numbers are complex numbers with the imaginary part zero, one dimension less. An exclusion of the imaginary makes it possible to sort things like numbers in less or more, bigger or smaller, and to see difference just as the result of a subtraction. In one simple single dimension, on line. Shouldn't we actually consider once again what we are used to calling real and reality? Weiter. Wie weiter? Wie übersetzt man weiter? In eine Dimension, in zwei oder in dreien? farther or further or more or forward or wider or just on a line, on a surface or in or into space, areal oder real, or real on an aerial, a bien real, rey y reina, Spanish queens and kings, or black or white kings and queens as figures on a chessboard, on positions figured as a combination of letters and figures, D2 to D3. But in what kind of relation to the players, and which number or sort of dimension? In German, this could even depend from the verb, weiter gehen oder weiter werden. Weiter denken, wie weiter. On what line, what surface, on or rather in which sort of plane or place or space? Which space? And which language? On, said Beckett. Say on at the beginning of Wordsworth, one of his last books written in 1983, 30 years ago. Be set on, somehow on, till know-how on, set know-how on. Wordsworth is a text that explores strictly a counter direction to the West and westward, the way of competition, infinite progress, improvement, plus and surplus. It moves resolutely and bravely into the inverse, the minus. Say a body, when on, no mind, when on, that at least, a place, when on, for the body, and so on and on, weiter and weiter. In one direction, or two, or three, many, one direction could be the way, the direction of a first person singular, the me. Could everybody identify with it, or just everyone? Could there be a difference, and what could be the difference between everybody and everyone? Manifold starts with three, or two, with a pair, mit einem Paar. Ein Paar could mean some, too. It depends how Paar is written with small or capital P, or how two is written with W or double O. Can you hear the difference? The difference between ein Paar und ein Paar, between indeterminately many or few and two, could you? The Beckett text starts with on and goes on to one which is none, just a one in the void, in a voided space and avoids any circumstances. No words for him whose words. Him? One. No words for one whose words. One? It. No words for it whose words. It turns out to be a skull, the hardware of the head we are thought to think with, without any properties, for instance, sex or gender. No hands, no face, skull and stare alone, seen and seer of all. By emptying, by avoiding, it becomes space, the space of a language, and in a language, an open space by excluding everything that would exclude something else. That's Beckett's one, the minus one. None but the one where none. No other than, no other one but others. It goes on with the twain. One old man and child. It could be two, but it could be one, too. They could be one and could be two, a man in different ages, or a childish old man. He could be two, could be one, and child could be girl or boy. Can you see the ship in this relation? It's moving just like ein Paar, but in another way, in another language. Beckett's Twain is in a movement too. Backs turned, bows bowed, joined by halt holding hands, blood on as one, one shade, another shade. Schatten ohne Licht und doch nicht ohne Licht. Licht, eine Bewegung wellenförmig, deren Geschwindigkeit wir als Absolutes sehen. Das heißt, diese Bewegung sehen wir nicht. Wir sehen das Licht und Schatten, die sich zu bewegen scheinen im Lichtschein. Oder nur einen, den Schatten, der sich bewegt, der Schatten, die Schatten, Schatten in Bewegung im Licht, so wenig wie möglich davon bei Beckett. Keine Dunkelheit, nur so viel, so wenig Licht, dass Schatten darin gerade eben noch möglich sind. Mere Minimum. Jenes Minimum Licht, das Schatten ermöglicht, jenes Minimum zwei, das Mehrzahl ermöglicht, ein anderes ermöglicht zum einen, aber so uneindeutig wie nur möglich zum anderen. Der eine nicht und nicht der andere, plus anders, plus eins, vielleicht ja. Just one and only else. Ohne bestimmten Artikel, ohne irgendeine nähere oder auch weitere Bestimmung überhaupt, mere minimum. Als handle es sich um eine Probe auf Heisenbergs Unbestimmtheit-Relation, miteinander korrelierte Größen beobachten, relationship. The uncertainty principle of quantum physics states that certain pairs of physical properties of a particle cannot simultaneously be measured precisely. The more exactly the one, for instance, the position is determined, the less the other, the momentum in that case, can be known and vice versa. Maybe there is a possibility for both, a degree of uncertainty, both can be observed but not measured. Couldn't this be that minimum? At most, mere minimum, mere most minimum. Der eine bestimmt nicht, does not ascertain or rule or determine, for sure not. Der andere ist nicht bestimmt, wird nicht bestimmt, ganz bestimmt nicht. Beide gleich und anders, gleichzeitig, simultaneously, contemporary. A pair joined by halt holding hands, two together in the, or rather, same space, same time, same tense, but maybe a different sense. Some one. During the last third of Beckett's text, there emerges a third, shade three, from now an old woman's. The tertium non datur, the third, that or who is excluded by the law of the excluded middle in person, a shade. Nothing and yet a woman. Old and yet old. Sie, die ist und die sind, die sein kann und die sein können. Who is, who are, who could be. Could be she, could be you, could be they. Remember, nothing and yet a woman. A word, one word, together with others, could have different eigenstates, and that's also a word I'm extremely fond of. Usually and commonly called meanings, sense in that case would make sense just in the singular, right? Eigenstate is a cute German English bastard conceived under the circumstances of quantum physics, becoming somewhat popular by a thought experiment from 1935 called Schrödinger's cat. quantum theory stated that quantum systems would exist in a superposition of different eigenstates in a simultaneity of states, which all are possible for the system, but normally, meaning measured, exist just discretely and would exclude each other. The decision which state becomes real is produced first by the act of observation, of measurement. This is directly connected to Heisenberg's uncertainty principle. Erwin Schrödinger undertook to translate that into what we used to call reality. Thinking of a cat in a box where the life or death of the cat depends on a random event, the state of a subatomic particle. As long as the box is not opened, that cat would be, by the terms of quantum physics, dead and alive, both at once, in a superposition. And everybody knows cats are eyes, or? But back to the eigenstates of words. In English, the word eigen could be either own, or strange, or separate, or proper, or peculiar, or distinct, or, as a Franz Pupil translated, a law unto itself. And state could be translated into German as Zustand, Staat, Status, and a long list of verbs where my favorites would be feststellen and erklären. The latter clearly comes close to the semantic field of deuten. Eigenstate is a word both German and English, and with obviously different possible eigenstates. A purebred Schrödinger cat. What is light? And should something that is heavy also be dark? It could, but it needn't be, just one possibility. Light is the element of possibilities, of probabilities and plurality. It is not so easy to understand, nicht einfach, but is light, ist leicht, ist hell, ist Licht mit großem L oder kleinem adjective or noun. It leads us, lights us to the basics of quantum physics. But that's the moment when I first have to say I really admire these possibilities of plurality in the English language that speaking as a matter of course of basics, physics, mathematics, aesthetics, arts, and so on, in a plural form and not like German insisting on the singular. Sometimes I feel tempted to suspect that large parts of German philosophy and science are driven just by an excessive use of the singular and a definite article on top. I was scared stiff when I heard that I'd have to do this lecture zur Ästhetik der Gegenwart. Die Gegenwart, die Ästhetik, only one, only the right one. And no light one left over, just draft. I felt awfully relieved by translating the subject into its local circumstances as contemporary aesthetics. Both singulars vanished without any trace. Not only the possibility of more than one idea of aesthetics arose as absolutely normal, the idea of Gegenwart, of present or of presence became wider, wider, more spatial, not just linear or plane. An idea became a concept, something that can be caught together, zusammen, gefasst. Contemporary could be translated into German also as zeitgenössisch or zeitgemäß. The latter sets a focus on Zeit, that time, according to which one ought to behave, act, or be up to date and online on the timeline. Zeitgenössisch refers rather to a plural form. Zeitgenossen, contemporaries, people, or things, or ideas, or whatever, all with lots of possibilities to be different, sharing the same space of time, existing in coexistence together in relationships. This difference may also be a question of perception, of aesthesis, aesthetics, right or left. But back to light. Or shouldn't we have left it at all? light that leads us, as I said, to the basics of quantum physics. In the third of his famous lectures on physics, Richard P. Feynman spoke of a phenomenon which is impossible to explain in any classical way and which has in it the heart of quantum mechanics, the double slit experiment. It was first performed in 1802 by Thomas Young, who showed with it the wave character of light versus the Newtonian corpuscular theory accepted in those days. There is light from a single source passing through a plate pierced by two parallel slits and observed on a screen behind. Without any disturbance, you would see on the screen an interference pattern, a rhythm of shadows and light that's typical for superimposing waves. But in case you'd suppose that light consists of particles or the source is emitting particles, electrons or molecules, and you wish to find out, to detect through which of the slits or one particle is passing, to decide between left or right, to make sure, to measure, to objectify, to produce Eindeutigkeit. In that case, this interference pattern will collapse and it will vanish. Following the Copenhagen interpretation of quantum physics, it shows that light can be seen both with particle or wave properties, but not simultaneously. This holds for particles too. This interpretation was also, you see, a sort of translation, mathematical equations into principles, into words like complementarity, uncertainty, probability, correspondence, or entanglement, all referring to relationships, relativity, plurality. And thus, the act of observation and the state of the observer became a problem, a topic, the subject, the point of view. Is this an abstract point with dimension zero, or one point on a line, or a place on a plane, or being in space, the point of a second person of you, or a point of few, or just one point of a few? How to consider, imagine difference, how to say? This is a question of language too, and of different languages, of the difference of languages, the one we have internalized and which we name our mother tongue. Most of you have other ones than I have. The one we think is natural, the one we are speaking and thinking and dreaming, and all the others we can learn. And that could teach us what makes our way of speaking, thinking, and dreaming eigen, makes it different. Different, actually, could be a very good translation for eigen, meaning other than others. Even what Feynman called the only mystery of quantum physics could be named as just difference, and how we look at it, and how we speak about it, or on or in it, from an inside conscious that we are inside or parts of that difference, as if science would be possible as conscience, conscience, an awareness of being together and different, of Gegenwart, contemporaneity, one and together with others, singular and plural, movement on moving ground, possibly sailing a friendship. By contrast, the classical place of the observer I would describe as chess player state, the position of God, the scientist or the author, in another dimension somewhere outside, above the board, where down the below the wars were fought, the battles. Speaking about the things above, not reachable from below in a space of absence somewhere in general, moving the figures as a general, as an observer, manipulator, creator of minor creatures, of objects and objectivity. A one as single point that allows no difference except the other, an enemy to be defeated, the black or the white one, the left or the right, or the right. To checkmate means to reduce the possibilities of movement of the other to zero. A pretty German word for this would be feststellen, which one could also translate as to detect, to fix, to declare, to ascertain, to determine. But chessboards are, like maps or pictures, two-dimensional on solid, stable ground, not moving. And figures are just figured. Computers, Turing machines, were invented, constructed by considering chess problems. At least pioneers like Alan M. Turing or Konrad Zuse did so. And since Deep Blue defeated Kasparov in 1997, they are definitely the better players. In relation to them, in the logic of computability, failing is the only thing human beings can still do. Nice example for failing, see also Kramnik versus Deep Fritz in 2006 or Blunder of the Century. An example for encouragement, see Beckett. All of old, nothing else ever tried, ever failed, no matter, try again, fail better. Or to translate a bit of the untranslatable, nicht verzagen, besser versagen. And this text is indeed untranslatable. It moves inside the English language and in a difference to others which Beckett also spoke, like French or German. Beckett's very own, his Eichen writing, started when he started to write in French in 1945. And an important part of this writing was further to translate his own texts in a very Eichen way. In the late 1950s, he began to write texts in English again, translating them later into French. But worst word who is, besides some media scripts like Film, Press, Quad, and Nacht und Träume, two longer French texts and some tiny poems called Militonat, worst word who is the only text he did not translate, not translate himself. And in trying to translate it, one can actually do nothing but fail, beginning with the first word, on. A preposition that can be translated into German in more than seven ways, and each one would show another position in relation to a supposed object. Auf, an, bei, in, über, zu, und weiter, remember in how many dimensions. A one-syllable, two-letter word, a mere most minimum that is furthermore a palindrome, a literally connected counterpart of no, a negative of denial, and so on. I started this lecture with no, so I'll end with on. And in the end, the subject, that, as it turns out, is failing. It becomes a different, a failing one, by failing one, failing to win. And couldn't it do anything but fail, maybe furthermore sail? Beyond the line, in a wider sense, in difference, in a friendship. I've hopefully too failed or have missed the point to tell you something about something, commonly so-called contemporary aesthetics like fashionable subjects, books of the season, and up-to-date authors one has to know. But eventually, you've observed or just felt some strange sort of movement that might be or might show the wave nature, light nature of language, possibly as poetry. Something that has the power to move us, moving ground. Etwas, das nicht zu fassen ist, doch zu zeigen, zu sehen. Ein Muster aus Licht und Schatten, ein Rhythmus, a pulsing pattern of shadows and light. Something you cannot grasp, but see, but sense, but you cannot count it. Something that is perhaps not computable. A text, whether it's 30 years old or 3,000, can be contemporary to us. It can speak to us, it's possibly able to touch and to move us. And that also means it does all this in a language which is not just spoken in past tense and passive voice, but is speaking in a kind of continuous present, a gift. It's ours to imagine. Thank you. Thank you.